What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back and welcome to Action Movie Anatomy in 2017. Today, we are breaking down the very first successful Marvel Comics movie, though not a Marvel Studios movie. This is none other than There Are Worse Things Out Tonight Than Vampires. Like what? Like me. It's Blade, guys. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Oh, yes!
Oh, here we go.
We're in a 1998 music video right now.
I want to go to a nightclub. Maybe a club. Maybe a nightclub.
Maybe a nightclub. There's a DJ. There's an old computer.
He's, like, pointing like this.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. He's got sunglasses on.
We walk in slow-mo. The bartender's, like, making a drink in slow-mo.
That never happened.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. Welcome to 2017. This is our first show in 2017. We took 2 weeks off for the first time in our friggin' history. We'd never taken 2 weeks off, right?
We'd never taken 2 weeks off in a year and a half, in 85 episodes. It's really intense.
A whole episode, Steven.
But it was nice to take a little break. It's very good to come back. It's awesome to come back to Blade, which was like one of the coolest, most badass movies I ever watched when I was 10 years old.
Yeah. This is one I always tell the story. My dad took me to the movie theater to see this movie when I was 10. It's rated R.
Your dad always takes you to sweet. All right. Let's just go ahead and tone that down. About to pop out of my seat. We got Stephen Lemieux in the booth, everybody.
Yeah, welcome
our
back,
executive
guys.
Producer.
Good to be back. Happy New Year.
Yeah,
Happy
man.
Happy New Year.
Welcome back.
Welcome.
You
were saying your dad
took me to this movie in the theaters. This was an exciting one. So guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. We're back in the studio. We're back doing the show. Episode, what is this, 85?
I think it's right around there, like 83, 84. I'm like fascinated by this father taking son to like really inappropriate movies.
Uh-huh.
And like the people that worked at the theater.
Yeah.
Because like you had your parental supervision. They couldn't say no, and he's clearly your father.
Right.
But I wonder if there was someone working there just like, God damn it, there they go again.
Yeah.
That kid's going to be screwed up.
Right. Well, here's the like the tangent. Well, I'll keep it to 30 seconds so we can get into the episode. But I realized the other week that basically, so my parents got divorced when I was 10, right? That year, literally 1998.
It was Blade, yeah.
Yeah, Ronin, all those movies I always talk about. So what I was like, not beknownst to me at the time, was obviously there was trouble at home. So for the 18 months prior to them telling me, obviously my dad was making an effort to spend a lot more time with me, because I don't remember seeing a single movie in theaters prior to 1996, really. Like, there's a few. Like, I remember Mortal Kombat, but, like, that was with friends. But clearly, when I was 9 and 10, he was making an effort to take me to movies that, like but he was like, these are movies I want to see also.
Yeah.
So all these movies that I remember, The Siege, Enemy of the State, Ronin, Blade.
Was like, Ronin was the one.
That's the one, yeah.
That's the good one. Go watch our Ronin episode. There's a great story in there.
I just remember seeing all these movies, and it occurred to me at one point, they all came out in 1996, 7, or 8. Which
That's
is
crazy.
Just hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember like seeing any movies with them in 1999. Like, I think we saw The Matrix, probably.
Yeah, you have to.
But in any case, that's my story. This is Action Movie Anatomy, guys. So we do action movies on the show. We cover them. We talk about them for over an hour. We do stupid impressions. If you're in the live chat, guys, welcome back. The action movies we do on the show usually adhere to four basic rules. Those rules are, number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Blade's a classic hero that plays by his own rules.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. Steven Dorff's a freaking genius.
Yeah, he has to be.
He's a freaking turd.
He's a freaking genius. He's a freaking weasel.
Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, mercenary figure. He's not a mercenary.
He's not because no one's hired him.
Paid.
Yeah.
He's just a vampire hunter vigilante.
Yeah, he's just a vigilante out for revenge.
I mean, I guess the reason that that he doesn't qualify is because this is kind of a superhero movie. We don't do those on the show.
It's like so close to a superhero movie. And then finally, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion, which it absolutely does.
Does it?
Yeah, I was actually thinking specifically when he blows the safe.
Yeah.
The door.
And also
there's nothing in there.
Yeah.
That thing is terrifying.
See, that's the worst part of the movie.
That is very hard to watch.
Yeah, that was clearly like somebody just being like, hey, let's punch this up.
Yeah.
Let somebody in the studio be like, let's have a giant fat thing.
Like the fattest thing you've ever seen, then we're going to burn it.
And it's going to fart.
Yeah, it's going to fart.
It'll fart and you'll laugh because it's big.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was pretty offensive.
It was gross.
Anyway, guys, that's the rules. We are on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, discussing movie news, and all things movie-related. And we're going to get into talking about Blade. So without further ado, let's roll the trailer. It's an okay trailer.
It's not bad.
It's a 98 trailer.
Yes. It was... As things in 98 were, it was trying a little hard.
You got two things playing here, Steven.
Sorry, I forgot to cut the club theme song.
I'm just gonna only play that song.
That's all the trailer is, actually, guys.
It's just images of the theme song? I thought that's what it was.
That would have been fantastic.
Better wake up. The world you live in is just a sugar-coated topple. There is another world beneath it.
He's a great actor.
He's very good. I thought that he stopped acting because of the whole tax thing, but it was just like a padded reason. It's just because he's not good.
Well, he was broke, though. So yeah. He had to start doing a lot of straight-to-video.
Really? Yeah, I remember all those videos.
Depends on our ability to blend in with a lust for power.
We should be ruling.
This is just making me want to watch this freaking movie again.
Food. Yeah.
They've got their claws into everything. Politics, finance, real estate.
There's a war going on out there. He makes the weapons. I use them.
Now, it's pretty sweet, Steven. It's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah.
Tonight, the age of man comes to an end.
We're gonna be gods.
And naughty vampire gods.
Dude, Ryan Hurst would be a great wrestler.
Vampires. Like what?
Ryan Hurst.
Opie from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's a good point. Oh, there's a song.
His mother was attacked by a vampire while she was pregnant.
Half immortal.
You got the best of both worlds. All our strengths. None of our weaknesses.
He is their greatest fear and our only hope.
All right, Steven, I'm going to have a seizure. Oh, man. So sweet.
Wesley Snipes. Steven Dorff.
You're one of them, aren't you?
You're one of them, aren't you?
I'm something else. Like me.
Do you like that? That's good. That's really good. Blade.
The sword fighting was definitely sweet.
Yeah.
Like,
it wasn't as sweet as I remembered it being, but it was very sweet.
And it's a cool character trait that he... we'll play this later. So, spoiler, guys. Spoiler that we... Oh, AMA question. Let's just try to pull one of those. Responded. I forgot.
All right.
Spoiler, I actually got to interview Wesley earlier last year, and I actually asked him what he would do as far as basically recasting the Blade role for a reboot. Funny answer. We'll play that clip for you later. we will not play it just yet. So,
it was a very good clip.
It's a good clip. So, that's the trailer for the movie. As far as trailers go from 1998, you know, it's rock solid. It's entertaining.
I mean, it's what you expect. There's not a lot of depth to it. It kind of shows you what... It's always like a highlight reel, you know? It's not like trailers nowadays try to tell a story, whereas trailers back then were like a highlight reel of the cool parts of the film.
Yeah, definitely. I think the trailers today also are a little bit more artistic. Mm-hmm. The trailers back then, it was kind of like, you need to know exactly what this movie's about.
Yes.
You know, like, these are the characters. These are the stakes.
This is the good guy. This is the bad guy doing bad things.
In an impossible situation. This summer. Like, that's kind of what trailers back then used to be. Yeah. Now these trailers these days will be a lot more like, you know, I don't know, you know, dark, ominous tone.
Yeah.
And, like, dramatic imagery.
I think, you know, like, you look at, like, trailers like Dunkirk, even.
Yeah, right.
You know, things like that. It's still, even that is different than what you get in, like, a Saving Private Ryan trailer.
Yeah.
And that's only 15 years.
Right. And it's the type of movie, right? It's action movie versus, you know, drama and all that sort of thing. So, in any case, guys, we're going to get straight into thesis statement. Thesis statement is the part of the show where we share a bold thought, something usually rooted in, like, either hyperbole or, like, just a very factual statement that we believe in. We're going to kind of defend throughout the movie. And, I am going to jump in on this one, and I'll give it a little bit of preface. Mm-hmm. If you want to go, you got something?
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the AMA question, but I think what I'm going to do for my thesis, I was originally going to do something about how, like, despite the success of this film, no one's career took off, which was kind of odd.
It's funny, I had the same exact thought.
Yeah, because you and I were talking about it yesterday, and we're like, everyone in this is serviceable.
Yeah.
No one does a bad job. I mean, honestly, the worst actor in the movie is Wesley Snipes.
As far as performance in the movie goes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, his performance in the movie, thank you. But, like, Steven Dorff and the two ladies, like, their two counterparts are great, and Donald Logue is fun.
Yeah.
But that was weird. But I think what I'm going to do is, despite the success, I'm going to start it the same way, despite the success of this film, I think that the sequel is a far superior movie.
Really?
I think that Blade 2 is way better than Blade 1, and I think it's one of those very few situations where you have a great first film and a better second.
Hmm.
You know, like a Godfather situation.
I'll really have to go watch the second movie again. It's been since it came out,
I think when I was just looking at the trailer, trying to find the question, I think people mentioned that they think 2 is better, and I think someone just said that in the live chat as well. I think you should go watch it.
Cool.
Definitely.
We can discuss that a little later in the show. I'm going to say, so for those of you that don't know this, and we don't do comic book movies on the show, so if you listen a lot, you probably do, but if you don't, you haven't heard me go on this rant before. As a little kid, comic books were my entire life. I wanted to be a comic book illustrator. My mom's an artist. I used to draw comics all the time. I have 6,000 comics in my mom's basement. I worked in comic book stores for store credit starting at 10 years old. Like, it was my whole entire life. I was a little chubby kid with a bowl cut who just, like...
This was back when it was not cool.
Yeah, this is, like, in the mid-90s. So, this movie came out in 1998 when I was 10 years old, and there was a point of pride in knowing that this was based on a comic book, because comic books as a 10-year-old were part of my identity. They weren't in popular culture where everyone liked comics. I mean, there were some things. There was the Marvel Action Hour on TV, the cartoon where Iron Man and Fantastic Four had that split half-hour cartoon series. There was the X-Men and the Spider-Man cartoons. Some of that stuff was popular. You know, the Batman movies had been big in the early 90s. But really, as far as, like, the biggest movies of the year being comic book movies, comic book culture taking over television.
Like, the most comic book culture that I got were what things that you mentioned there, and then, like, Marvel versus Capcom, the arcade game.
Right.
That was it.
Exactly. All my friends played basketball in college, or in school, and I, like, wanted to read comic books. So, in 1998, when this movie came out, it was a big hit. And my thesis is, Blade was the first successful Marvel Comics movie, but its greatest strength at the time was that no one knew it was a comic book.
And Octane Freddy asked an AMA question, basically saying your thesis in question form.
Yeah.
Saying, like, was this movie successful because it wasn't advertised as a comic book movie back then? And to speak to both of you, I completely agree. I think yes. I think back then that wasn't a cool thing to do.
Yeah, it was like Wesley Snipes with, like, a gun and a sword killing vampires.
Yeah.
He was like an action hero. He wasn't like your white guy in spandex. He was like black dude wearing, like, you know, kind of looser clothes and a trench coat.
It was like Shaft mixed with, like,
Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like
Van Helsing.
Right, and that's the reason this was, I mean, it was rated R, for fuck's sake. Like,
yeah.
The
very rated R.
Yeah, like, they're... As a kid, as a 10-year-old who would see this movie, it was PG, you weren't allowed to see it. Mm-hmm. So it was like this thing, you're like, I saw Blade, it was really cool, there's so much blood.
And then on the other end of that, being like an 18 to 25-year-old being like, let's go watch a comic book movie, is not the same as it is now.
No.
Whereas back then it was like, no, let's go watch Wesley Snipes fuck shit up.
Yeah, right. You know, this is only 5 years after, what's it called, Demolition Man. Like,
yeah.
He was, this is like still like, I don't want to quite go as far as to say peak Wesley Snipes, but this is tail end of peak Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, this is he's in it.
Yeah.
He's in it right now.
The next 5 years of his career are kind of like the Blade movies, and then his career kind of falls off a cliff. But, like, he was still very much a marketable, big-name guy, and that's why this movie was as big as it was. So I think that its biggest strength is that no one knew it was a comic book.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, I would tell all my friends, like, well, did you know that Blade's actually based on a comic book? What's really fascinating about that, though, to just kind of go down that road a little bit more, is that, so this is based on a comic book, but it's not really based on a character that existed, if that makes any sense. Steven, if you want to cue up the third image I have here, it's
so what you're saying for our audience is that Blade is just, it's almost like the Jason Bourne pull.
Well, so here, check this out, right? Yeah, very, very similar. So this is like what Blade in the comic looked like, right? He's like a swagged out dude. He's basically Shaft. He's like, you know, red leather jacket. The traits that he had in the comic book were different, and he wasn't a prominent character. He showed up in like Tomb of Dracula, like old horror comics from the 70s, but he wasn't like dude in trench coat. He had different traits. He didn't regenerate. He wasn't a vampire. The deal was that he was immune to vampire bite, so he couldn't be turned. That was like his thing. So he would kill vampires because he couldn't be killed.
Interesting.
He wasn't really a superhero as much as he was like this almost like fanatical, almost like a little psychotic, to the degree that he wanted to hunt vampires. So what they did, the character was created by Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan in the 70s.
Of course, a guy named Wolfman created,
But And Wolfman actually sued Marvel later, like way later on, once this was a huge franchise, for like $35 million and lost, because he was like, I wasn't in an understood creator-owned by Marvel contract at the time, so I deserve money from all of the stuff. And they were like, no, you created a character that basically has nothing to do with the character we have now, and you worked for us at the time, and we own the thing you created.
Owned.
So,
owned.
So he lost.
Yeah.
But what's crazy about this is, the comic book character was never successful. It was never a popular character. It was just like a very fringe character.
So right. And you were saying, after this movie came out, even though this movie was huge, it still didn't sell.
But
right?
Here's what's wild, and this is the thing that I think will blow people's minds. Wesley Snipes is a producer on the film franchise,
mm-hmm.
but Wesley Snipes is what the character looks like now. So in the comic books, when Blade shows up, he's basically Wesley Snipes.
Right.
Like, he dresses that way. He's the black dude with the short hair.
After these came out.
Right.
Okay.
So they basically based the comic book character, and they updated the comic book character based on Wesley Snipes' character from the movie.
That was based off of a loose rendition of, yeah.
He basically recreated the character in the movies, and that's what the character is
now. And
now
Wesley Snipes is just a comic book character.
But he doesn't like get any money from the fact that the comic book character is just him, which is bizarre.
It's great. It's kind of sweet. Yeah. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, so there's your piece of history.
Fun little trivia.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on to the next part of the show. This is going to be fist pump moment. If you guys watch the show, you'll know this is that part of the movie where something happens and you kind of like look around at your buddy and you're like, oh, God, I get to watch the rest of this movie right now. This is fucking sweet. You almost want to call your pal and be like, hey, you know, you got to go watch Blade again.
I know you've seen it, but just trust me, this part is awesome.
You got to turn it on. You'll be stoked. And so I actually thought, I mean, there's a literal fist pump. Like,
oh, when he does his?
Snipes does a fist pump.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's in the club scene. But for me, my fist pump is actually, hilariously enough, when the techno song starts playing.
Yeah.
When they first walk into the club at the beginning of the movie. Because I remember watching this movie a lot as a kid. They walk in and, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like slow-mo dancing.
And yeah. And it's kind of, like, sexy. And
yeah. Basically, this movie is a series of music videos. Like,
yeah. It's just, we talk about that in like, certain 90s action movies where it's just kind of like a bunch of music videos.
It sort of seems like the entire movie, everything about it is just a club or a rave. Like,
yeah.
That's all. It's all Steven Norton was doing. He's like, I'm just going to basically make the whole movie.
Anytime anyone fights, we need techno.
Yeah, it's got to be techno. It's got to be, like, everything has to just feel like I'm directing a fucking music video for The Prodigy.
But in the 90s, it was perfect.
Yeah.
That was what you wanted. So my fist pump moment, or no, you please. So that was it. It was just right when you walk in.
Just, yeah, that moment when it kind of goes to slow-mo and you like see the DJ and you're like, yeah. What is this place?
This is vampires.
Yeah, it's a vampire place.
Mine is like right after that. It's in the same thing. It's when you first, see Blade and he starts fighting and the music turns back on. And what I like is that his fighting is super clean.
Yeah.
And it's like real martial arts.
Right.
At least it looks that way.
Well, that's what he was all about.
Yeah, exactly. But, and then, so they're fighting, and it's that moment he takes the stake and he stabs a vampire through the chin and lifts him up into the roof.
Yeah.
And you and I were watching the movie, and it was just like the music, and we're like, oh, God, this is sweet. I'm in. Like, we're 5 minutes into this movie. Yeah. I'm completely sold on it.
Totally.
That was my fist pump moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's like, this movie's like bad, but like, Not in a way that takes away from it at all. Like, it's bad in the way that, like, it was everything that comic book movies at the very beginning kind of needed to be, which is, like, disguised as an action movie. It's like, Wesley Snipes was a producer on this movie, and insisted things kind of go his way. He, like, clashed with Steven Dorff a little bit, even, because he was, like, trying to direct Dorff a little bit. And he's like, you have to trust me as the producer of this movie.
You have to trust me. Steven Dorff is a tiny man.
Little dude. Yeah, he's like 5'7" or something. But, it's funny. Like you said, clearly the martial arts are, like, on display.
Mm-hmm.
The fighting is all, like, very clean because, like, Snipes was a martial arts guy. He wanted all of his sweet moves to be on display.
Like, perfectly, and everything else is kind of muddled.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So,
Guys, if you have fist pump moments, share them with the live chat. My phone is dying, but I do have it open, so I'm going to read them off if I can. Let's move on and talk about where these dudes were at in their career, huh?
Yeah. So definitely. So Snipes is coming off of the best part of his career, which is the entire
Righteous.
Like late 80s into the 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, down in the Delta, U.S. Marshals, One Night Stand. I don't remember One Night Stand. I remember hearing about Down in the Delta. Like, I saw it at the video store. And U.S. Marshals we've both seen several times.
Yeah. I felt like when U.S. Marshals came out, maybe that was peak Snipes. Even though he wasn't crushing it then, I think that was when he was given the opportunity to be like, you can do anything you want now.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, so maybe Blade is peak Snipes. Maybe this defines peak Snipes because it's the most successful movie he was ever in. So maybe 98 is his best year.
Yeah.
I mean, but as you start to kind of go back, it's like, yeah, you have all these 90s movies. You have, you know, Drop Zone, and you have, like, yeah, you have Demolition Man, and you have, like, is he...
Passenger 57, is that later?
Passenger 57, yeah. The Art of War, that's after, I think. Is he in Rising Sun, or am I...
Yes.
He is, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, he's in Rising Sun.
I feel like I've seen the box, but I can't...
Yeah, with Sean Connery, and he's in, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Rising Sun, right. And then the villain is Shang Tsung.
Shang Tsung.
And, yeah, he had, like, a New Jack City. Like, he had a sweet run. King of New York, right? Like, he's...
Oh, yeah.
He's in a couple Spike Lee movies. He has, like, a
I guess Peak Snipes was a little before this.
Yeah, he had, like, a really good run there. Tu Wong Fu. The whole entire 90s for him was pretty sweet. And Blade is kind of like... It's just funny because it happens at the end, and you would think that he would go up after Blade,
right? Well, because we have these couple things that we do, and it's like if we're talking career defining role, it's got to be Blade.
Yeah,
it's not even close.
I thought about putting it on the list, but it's too clearly.
What else would it be?
It would 100% be this.
Yeah, okay, and it's like you said, it's at the very end of his run, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean they were trying to develop Blade as far back as 1992. And LL Cool J was attached to play Blade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, and there was, you know, all the guys that worked on this movie. Goyer was like, he considered three people. He considered Denzel, he considered Snipes, and he considered Lawrence Fishburne for the role when they actually got to casting it. But he always felt that Snipes was the perfect guy for it.
I think so. I think looking back, and especially with, like, The Matrix happening later on, it would have... I think for who I was as a movie viewer, Lawrence Fishburne coming out of nowhere in The Matrix, coming out of nowhere, for me was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
And if he was Blade beforehand, it would have ruined it for me.
Yeah, he had been a supporting character in a lot of like hits, but he wasn't like an action guy.
So and then Denzel, he's too Denzel.
Yeah, it's funny. Like that's, I mean, if Denzel had been Blade in 1998, it's just such a different career turn for him. He was never in a franchise until Equalizer. He was never in a franchise series. That was his first franchise series ever.
Yeah.
He never did it. He never did action movies where there was like a sequel and a third one.
He didn't need to.
Yeah.
I think it keeps him from being labeled as anything.
Yeah.
So with Snipes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we play this game sometimes, guys, and it's overrated, underrated, and properly rated. And the question is with Wesley Snipes today, and Steven, if you want to contribute on this or listen, I'd be curious to know what you think on this as well. Is Wesley Snipes overrated? Is he underrated? Or is he properly rated? I think that Wesley Snipes, by today's standards, is exactly properly rated.
Well, first of all, to Esteban, Tu Wong Fu, thanks for everything, Julie Newmar is an awesome movie with him, John Leguizamo, and Swayze, where they play cross-dressers, and you got to go check it out.
That movie's very
entertaining. If you've never heard of it or seen it, it's very entertaining.
It's actually a pretty good movie.
It is a good movie. Yeah, it really is. It's a classic.
You watch it with your sisters, I'm sure.
I watch it with my mother. My mother took me to sweet movies, too.
I was going to The Rock.
I was going to Tu Wong Fu. I completely agree with you. I think that if his career would have kept going, and he would have kept being the lead in action movies, then he would be overrated. I think that he's not underrated because he was given a run. He was given a 10-year, 15-year run of being the guy, one of the few African-American actors in Hollywood who were given leading roles, especially as a hero.
Yep.
There's
very few. If you look at like the pantheon of action movies, and this was actually one of the questions that was proposed.
Yeah, this was from Josh Ryan, actually.
Yeah, there's very, very few black heroes in the run of action movies from the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s. There's a lot more black villains.
And the ones that were, like, the black heroes were always, like, I mean, they were larger than life. Like, weren't the everyman. I mean, there was, this is going to be terrible because my movie knowledge on this topic is very low, but it's like the ones that pop into my head immediately are, like, you know, Shaft.
Yeah.
And Blade. And, oh man, there was one more that was just like just screaming at me. But you didn't get it. You didn't get like the everyman.
Yeah, like Jamie Foxx showed up, and he's kind of the hero in Collateral, and that's in 04. Yeah, I mean,
it's even later.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you didn't have that many, because if you think about the guys that were getting those roles, who were like signing those deals, Snipes is one of the only ones who was like the action hero.
Yeah,
there's just not that many.
And Jackson never had like an action run. He was in a few action movies, you know, but it wasn't the same. He was either like a sidekick or a bad guy, or like in Pulp Fiction he has like a smaller role.
I mean, you talk about you know, Denzel's obviously one of the big one of the big all-timers. Yeah, there's just not that many. So it is interesting to see this. And he's also in this movie not playing any kind of like exploitive, like
exploitive. He's just a dude.
Yeah, he's a quiet stoic. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a couple lines where he like breaks character, which is like one of I think the most satisfying parts about this movie.
Yeah,
is those little moments where he breaks character and goes into like kind of snipes. But there's only a few of them.
Yeah, I guess the other one, the big one that we're forgetting is probably Will Smith. But I felt like if you go back and you watch his movies now, it was that. It was exactly what we were just talking about. It where it was like exploiting what you thought those people acted like.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It was ridiculous.
Like, it was like young middle America friendly black hip hop guy.
Yeah, they were super feisty though.
Yeah. Which is like, and when you watch it today, it's like feels very over the top and like a little bit offensive.
Yeah, it's like it's the same way as when you'd watch like, I mean, I'm Asian American, so I can say it, is like you watch Asian Americans portrayed in the late 80s in comedies.
Yeah.
We were jokes. We were always wearing hats. We had the big teeth and like things like that, you know? It's like that was okay.
The Mortal Kombat, like,
Rice Patty man. Hat. It's just crazy. Yeah, it's crazy when you go back and watch stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think we're in agreement on properly rated.
Well, because I think, going back to the original question, is he overrated, underrated, or properly rated? If you go back 15 years to Blade 2 coming out, I think he was probably a little overrated at that point.
Yeah.
I think if I was thinking about that question then, I would say he wasn't the best part of most of the hits he was in. He's not the greatest actor. He gets by on charisma and, you know, being a pretty sweet martial artist, but like he's billed as this big like box office guy and I don't really give a shit. But now looking back, he got kind of a raw deal cuz like that show, The Player, that he was in a couple years ago, canceled immediately. Like,
of course, it was
his bankability, and like it's a bummer. I mean, this is probably a good time. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say he was losing his bankability then, because if you look at Blade 2 and Blade 3, the movies weren't the same as Blade 1, where it was just like, here's Wesley Snipes.
Yeah,
that's the movie.
Right.
You know, Stephen Dorff is here, but it's a Wesley Snipes film. In the second film, you get, you know, Norman Reedus comes in, and you've got I always forget his name.
Ron Perlman?
Well, I know Ron Perlman's in it, but the bad guy, something Lucas or Luke something. Anyway, you've got the supporting group.
Josh Lucas, maybe?
No, it's not Josh Lucas, but it's like a supporting group of like four other very talented actors who go on to having very successful careers. And then you go to the third film, and you've got Reynolds and Beale in there.
Yeah.
Who are like, they're on their way up. They're peaking.
Yeah.
So it's like, it wasn't about Wesley Snipes ever after the first film.
Yeah.
It was about what was around him.
Yeah, we're talking about it now, it almost makes me feel like he's a little underrated, but... But I think I would go for it, because it's not like he blows me away in anything.
Yeah, it's not like when he stopped being in films, I was like, damn it!
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes.
He had a sweet run, and he's properly rated, so...
And Art of War is awesome.
And Art of War. So, before we move on to Stephen Dorff, it actually reminds me, you know, he revealed to MTV in 2014 that he was interested in doing a Blade 4, saying that he thinks, you know, he's learned a lot of things he couldn't do back then that he can do now. And incidentally, when I talked to Wesley earlier this last year, and Steven actually has this clip queued up here, I ask him the question, and it's a little awkward, you'll see, because I don't phrase it in the best way. I don't basically suggest you would still be in the franchise, but I kind of ask him, if they gave you the reins to take over the franchise... as director and everything to recast it, what would you do? And this is kind of a funny answer that he gives me. It's a little awkward.
Coming out here, and you're in all kinds of stuff. You're in a Spike Lee movie. You're doing an Edward show. If you were given the reins by studio and they said, Wesley, we want you to take over the Blade franchise and direct, produce the whole deal. You get to recast the lead character. Who's the guy that you recast as the new Blade if you're going to make Blade 4?
Who's the guy? I'll take that guy Wesley Snipes.
I heard
he was pretty good, and he was still in pretty good shape, and still looked pretty much the same. I'll go with him. I don't know what he's doing now. He's, you know, hot commodity.
Watch how this ends.
Things. He's working quite a bit.
I like it. I'd watch it in a hot second, man.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much.
We're talking. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
I think that was
I'll kill you.
Unless I'm mistaken, maybe you guys read it differently than I do, but I think that was him saying to me, like, we'll see. We'll see what happens with me.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens when Blade 4 comes out. You stupid bastard.
I don't know. But in any case, you know, at least he laughed. He had a kind of little sense of humor about it.
Well, it's funny because,
He took a picture with me after, so he couldn't have been that mad.
That was basically an AMA question as well. I think it was Octane Freddy as well, or it might have been Josh Ryan, but it was like, of course you want to ask that.
Yeah.
Dude, you're almost... What is he, in his mid-50s?
54 now.
Yeah, he's 54.
Yeah.
That was 53 when you talked to him. Like,
He could still... He would still be in the movie.
Do it.
He should be like the Whistler character.
The way to ask the question that I didn't ask it was...
Right.
In a Blade 4, if you were going to have some sort of apprentice or younger character who you were grooming to take over the mantle once your character was kind of...
Yeah, because you would never say that to Tom Cruise in Mission... So Mission Impossible 6...
Who, yeah.
If you, who would you... You would be in it. Who else would be in it?
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, that was kind of my bad on that. But at least he seemed to have a sense of humor about it, and he was a very nice guy.
I'm telling you guys, this is not as easy as it looks. Yeah. I mean, when you're on the spot, you think you have a great question. The verbiage is very important.
Very, very important. Yeah, yeah. So, moving on to Stephen Dorff, who was, like, in 1998, totally, like, a sex symbol.
Yeah, he was, like, every girl wanted him.
Yeah, there's, like, that shot of him when he's sitting there listening to the music, and he's, like, leaning against the wall in the white shirt.
The shirt, it's open. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember, like, all the girls, like had that printed out. And, like,
his hair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
right? I remember looking at him and being like, damn it.
Oh, before we actually move on, you did see the picture that I threw up for Snipes, right?
Oh, sure, let's check it out real quick.
I don't believe we've met. We still haven't,
sir. So good.
All right, moving on. Thank you, Stephen.
All right, so Stephen Dorff in 96 was in Blood and Wine, and then also in 96, Space Truckers, and in 97, he was in City of Industry.
Never seen any of them.
I've never seen or heard of the latter two, but I'd heard of Blood and Wine, but I've never seen them.
Yeah. Stephen Dorff is like that guy that when this movie came out, he was like, a sex symbol, hot button, everybody talked about. Mm-hmm. And just like everybody else in this movie, I remember he popped up in some things over the next few years. There was this movie, Masked and Anonymous. No, that's not what it was called.
But phone died.
It was
so
a name
useless.
Like Masked and Anonymous or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing him and being like, oh, that's the guy from Blade. And then he's now repping blue cigarettes.
Well, it was like even watching him smoke cigarettes in Blade, you're like, dude, stop. Slow down.
Yeah.
This is not going to go well for you because his skin looks horrible now in those commercials. I don't know what it is. I've never heard horror stories about Stephen Dorff or Dorff. I've never heard anything negative or positive about him, and he wasn't bad in this film.
He's one of the best parts, I think. He honestly is a pretty... I mean, we do talk about this a little bit, the fact that, like, they do a terrible job explaining why he's as powerful as he is.
But he does a great job of just owning it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like a total little fuck who's just like super confident and like seems to be kind of ruthless.
And he's like not even he wasn't even born a vampire. It just seems you and I were both sitting there like, why don't they just kill him when he's at the council?
Yeah.
Because that's what it felt like they would do.
Right. It seems like the vampires. But I guess he has this like giant, all this money and this nightclubs or whatever.
It's still weird.
Yeah. They're like, we've been around for thousands of years. It's like, well, then just kill this guy.
Just kill the dude that's causing problems and go back to normal. Yeah.
So that's not... They don't do a great job explaining that.
I don't think I'd ever noticed that either before watching it yesterday.
No.
I'd never noticed that. It was just kind of a gigantic plot hole.
Yeah. As a kid, you just take it for granted.
You're like, he's bad. Look at his eyes.
But he's really good at it. I mean, I think that his performance as the villain in this movie is like one of the more admirable parts as far as the acting goes.
Yeah. And like, I have this thing... It's like a damn it. Like, you know, when Twilight came out and all those vampire movies, like, I always look at that and look at me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to be cast as a vampire.
Right.
I'm not. It's just not going to happen. And I remember looking, like, the casting of him in this, in the previews, and as a kid watching it, I was just like, this guy's perfect. Like, he looks like a real, like, he just looks like an evil little...
Bad guy.
Yeah, like an evil vampire.
Yeah, totally.
So I just love that about him. But this is interesting that you pulled that Jet Li was offered the part of Deacon Frost originally, and he opted out to do my favorite Lethal Weapon 4.
You could have been Stephen Dorff. You could have been Deacon Frost.
Done it. See, that's... I'm so happy that... Because
I wasn't Deacon Frost.
No, I'm so happy Jet Li wasn't him. Like, I love Jet Li, but for you guys that are fans of Lethal Weapon 4, his accent is really atrocious in there. Like, he's like fresh off the boat.
Yeah.
It would have not worked in Blade.
One of the other things here, moving on from characters, or from the actors... A couple just stats. The first cut of this film was like 2 hours, 20 minutes, and they had to do significant reshoots after the test audiences hated it at the end, because originally Stephen Dorff turns into like a giant swirling mass of blood. He's like a blood god.
Oh.
But it looked horrible.
I'm sure.
Because the CGI in this movie is bad. It's fine for the time, but it just really looks bad. And it's not that distracting, but like, at the end, that one shot when he cuts him in half, and he like reforms.
The skeleton angels flying out of them.
So I think that's kind of interesting. They did recuts. I mean, I was reading a little thing about this yesterday. One of the things I thought was so funny was, like, this comes on the heels of cartoons and video games that are the, that's the most prominent representation of Marvel Comics at the time.
Mm-hmm.
His fight with Steven Dorff at the end feels like an end boss in a video game.
I was thinking that watching it yesterday.
He goes, he's like in the center. Mm-hmm. He's like fighting this guy who seems to be impenetrable. He has his weapons like hidden in rock that he has to get his items. Yep. He has a sword in the wall. He has like the key to defeating him like hidden in some rocks. Like, it felt like playing a Super Nintendo video game.
For sure. And then, like, there's always, and the worst thing was you couldn't save back then.
Yeah.
Like, you'd save before the boss fight, and he'd have three stages.
Exactly.
And then the second stage is when you cut him in half.
Right.
And he realizes, like, oh my god, he's a god.
You think you've won, but it's the end boss, so you know there's going to be a second stage.
Yep, and then the third stage is, like, you actually have to use your brain.
Yeah.
And, so I totally felt the same way. That's so funny that you say that.
Yeah. So, in any case, moving on to the people behind the movie, David S. Goyer, we just talked about, just a couple weeks ago. He's like one of the sort of like godfather writers of the action movie meets comic book movie adaptation field.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very heavily involved in the Batman franchise, Dark City. Goyer graduated from USC in 1988 and sold his first screenplay for Death Warrant in 1989, which starred Jean-Claude Van Damme. With his first paycheck, he bought a new Isuzu Trooper, which was stolen the very first night he drove it home. My single favorite
stat. Love that. It's such a perfect 88 story.
That's great.
He wrote the original Dark Knight copy, and then he worked on the trilogy. Yeah, that was what we just covered him
for. Man of Steel, Blade Trinity. Like, he directed Zigzag, Blade Trinity, The Invisible, and The Unborn. So he's a big comic book writer, big, like, all over the stuff. We just talked about him a couple weeks ago. The Dark Knight episode was a lot of fun. I'd go check it out.
It was a really good episode. It's always cool when buddies that I haven't talked to in a while just reach out to me like, hey, love this episode of your show. So, moving on to Stephen Norrington, this guy, he's had a very interesting career as a director. He started off in special effects, and he did that for a long time on films like Aliens and Split Second. And he had his directorial debut in 1994 with Death Machine. But it was directing Blade that kind of put him on the map as a director, even though he had a very, very short career. He did that in the sequel, or excuse me, he did that and then turned down the sequel for some reason. And then he ended up working on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which... I don't know about that film. I feel like I actually like that film more than most everybody.
Yeah. Because
that movie's pretty widely regarded as very bad.
Well, let's finish talking about Norrington. I'll share some thoughts on that movie.
Okay, I'm so curious. All right. So then he was supposed to do Ghost Rider, and he ended up not doing that. He was attached to Freddy vs. Jason before Ronnie Yu took over. He's just kind of had a weird career. He was going to do the Clash of the Titans, but he didn't, and then he was going to do the Incredible Hulk, the one with that was the one with Norton.
Yep.
And then in 2008 it was announced that he was going to do the Crow franchise, which didn't happen. So he's just kind of like, I don't know why he keeps getting attached to all these projects and then turned down, but I think it's because
he hasn't worked in 13 years.
Like, he showed promise. And so let's hear what you have to say about League, because that was kind of that was a tilting point, I think.
For him. That was the big movie that he should have, in theory, done, like, that should have been a big success.
Should have crushed it. Yeah.
So League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is a weird one because the concept is great.
Yes.
And that movie should be great. Do you know who the writer of that original comic and the creator of it is?
I was just gonna say, I know it was a great comic.
He's the Godfather. It's Alan Moore.
It's Alan Moore.
Watchmen.
The comic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so Alan Moore is like widely regarded as the Michael Jordan of comic book writing. He's written most of the most important comic books ever. Watchmen being the biggest one. There was an imprint that came out somewhere in the 90s or early 2000s. I can't think what the name of it was, but he wrote like five titles for them or something. Prometheus, Tom Strong, Top Ten. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. These are all Gray Shirt. These are all these comics, the original concepts that he came up with, and he got to write all these books. And it was an independent publisher. It wasn't Marvel or DC. And they were all very, like, popular within the community. Everybody was like, these are fucking great. These are great comics. So they decided to make this comic into a movie.
League.
And, yep. And it, for all intents and purposes, should have been a huge success. But as Connery turned down... he turned down The Matrix and Lord of the Rings because he didn't understand the scripts. The next time a script came along that he didn't understand, which was this, he accepted it, which is so just like heartbreaking for the guy.
That's brutal. Because he did The Avengers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like 97.
Before this.
And so what I heard was...
He didn't understand The Matrix, I understand, but how do you not understand Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
What if he was Theoden? Oh, God, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, Connery would have been fucking sweet.
Come on, man.
So, he turned them down. So, obviously, working on this movie, there was some expectation that he had that he didn't get it, but he was going to do it anyway. And so, I guess, working with him specifically was so difficult for Norrington that that was the thing that Norrington swore to never do another movie again. He swore when he did The League that Connery. That was his last movie he would ever do.
Right, because I don't know if I missed it, but he'd sworn off, he'd quit directing a couple times.
Ever, yeah. And so he's, I guess, that to me, honestly, if you're the kind of guy that has four movies and then you cap it off with a major release like that, and you let...
With one of the biggest stars in the world.
Ever, yeah.
Ever.
And you swear off movies because of it, and you stay away from movies, that speaks to me that there's something going on in here.
Yeah.
In your head that's holding you back more than actually your experience. Because there's a lot of difficult to work with actors.
For sure.
And actors are pricks a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean,
Connery, as much as you want to love the guy, the dude's not that cool. I've heard interviews with him and Barbara Walters about how he thinks that hitting women is okay, and I've heard he's just a nightmare to work with, so like...
I'm sure he sucks, but like, that's not the point.
That's not the point. You're the director, you take helm, you have him do what you want him to do, and then you just don't work with him ever again.
Right, exactly. So that was the thing, and I guess that's where Norrington is now. He hasn't done a movie since. So moving on to producers, the major producers here are Snipes, who he produced the full franchise, and...
He had enough money to produce anything at this point.
Well, that's what we thought.
Well, right. That's what we thought.
He wasn't paying his taxes, so...
Yes. So millions of dollars.
So you had a couple people involved here. You had him and Avi Arad, and then you had a few other producers whose names probably most people don't know. The reason Avi Arad is relevant is because he is the guy that eventually was the CEO and founder of Marvel Studios, the studios that bring us all the wonderful Marvel movies we see now. He was a major, major player in the mid-90s. So a lot of people don't know this, but Marvel Comics went bankrupt in 1996.
Really?
They filed for bankruptcy. They had no money. I don't know what it was. I don't know the story that well, but they had mismanaged their properties and they were going under. So there was a movement to...
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
It's just crazy. Now they've got to be one of the most successful companies in the entire world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toy Biz owned Marvel Comics for a while. Toy Biz was like a company that made action figures.
Right.
So... and this is also a reminder, guys, of like, even though comics were at their biggest ever in terms of numbers sold in the early 90s, it's nothing compared to licensing properties. Movies, it's like not even a drop in the bucket, comic books. So Avi Arad was one of the guys that brought Marvel out of their bankruptcy in 1986 through a couple things. One of them was the movement into graphic novels as opposed to single books.
Copy, yeah.
Yeah, getting graphic novels into bookstores, like becoming the company that was on the forefront of selling comics for $17.95 for six issues as opposed to single books for $2.95. It was a major thing. The other one, of course, was licensing properties. So through the lawsuit, they ended up getting a bunch of their properties back that they had sold because they were bankrupt and the profit and all that stuff. And he was one of the two guys that brought them out of it. So eventually, he's unfortunately the producer behind the entire run of horrible movies that Marvel did, like including the good ones,
right? X-Men and X2.
He's behind all of them. You're talking all the Blade movies, X-Men 1, X2, The Last Stand. You're talking about Fantastic Four 1 and 2.
The Incredible Hulk. Both of them.
Yeah.
All the Hulks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than
Daredevil,
Ruffalo's.
Elektra, like The Punisher, all those movies.
Whoa.
So because he launched Marvel Studios, but he resigned from Marvel Studios in 2006, he is credited as being attached to the production of a couple of the movies, like Iron Man 1, he's on there for, but that was probably residual from when he was still working at the studio. So now he's doing some animation studio.
I'm sure we don't need to feel bad for the guy.
No, he's
doing all right.
I've heard stories about Avi Arad and, like, you know, his input being like, oh no, kind of like the metal spider thing you hear, stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
you know, it needs to be a little more like this, you know, like
right. So even though he's proven to be, or maybe he proved to be a genius at the time and bringing him out of the slump, maybe he's creatively not on par with where they're at
something.
Now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So then all the rest of the producers on here, you have Andrew J. Horn, Peter Frankfurt, and Robert Engelman. J. Horn is a guy who just worked on Blade and Blade 2 as a producer. Frankfurt and Engelman both have done quite a bit more stuff. Engelman, here's his run between 94 and 96.
It's a good run, guys.
The Mask, Mortal Kombat, and Kazam, starring Shaquille O'Neal. But here's the beauty of that.
Yeah.
If you think about Mortal Kombat, like, It feels a lot like Blade.
Yeah.
It feels a lot like Blade. It's
the same soundtrack.
Yeah. It feels like a very similar movie. And here's a great piece of trivia for you. When Stevendorf bites and kills that cop on the roof and throws him in the infinity pool, guess what movie's playing on the TV?
What is it?
Mortal fucking Kombat.
Is it Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
No, I know. I said that.
It's the same studio.
You remember me saying that? I was like, is that Reptile from Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay.
So then after Blade, he ended up doing...
This is a great run.
Mystery Men from Justin to Kelly and Scooby-Doo. For those of you that don't remember what Justin to Kelly is, it's the movie starring Justin Guarini and Kelly Clarkson after the first season of American Idol. And Justin Guarini, I think, was the runner-up, and she won.
Yeah.
And he had, like, that poofy hair.
Yep.
And it was like...
I remember the cover.
Yeah, from Justin
and
to Kelly.
And, like, seeing it on the walls in theaters. Oh.
So... And he's now the guy... He's now... Justin Guarini is...
No, he's doing stuff?
He's the guy in the Slim Jim commercials with the bandana.
That's him?
He's like... Doo, 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 doo. That guy? That's him.
Still making more money than I am.
Yeah. So, and there's, like, a credit at the bottom of the screen. It's like, Justin Guarini is. It's like Slim Jim Man or whatever.
I have to go watch this. Yeah. I don't know how I didn't know that.
Frankfurt basically worked on the Blade movies, started out on Scrooge and Lethal Weapon as, like, a production assistant or a coordinator or something like that. So that's that.
Right, and then his career ended with Blade Trinity, as did Wesley Snipes.
Yep.
Moving on to critical and box office, this was released by New Line. It was only $40 million to make. It was released in August of 1998. It grossed $70 million domestically, with an additional $61 worldwide, for a grand total of $131 million in 1998, with an opening weekend at $17 million.
You can throw up the box office graphic here we have for adjusted domestic gross by Wesley Snipes. As you can see,
White Men. Yep.
After adjustment, White Men Can't Jump is his biggest earner, followed by Rising Sun.
I have no idea what Waiting to Exhale is.
You don't?
No.
Like 1994, probably. It was like a...
Is it an action movie?
No. It's like an early...
Sounds like a drama.
It's like a Tyler Perry type of movie.
Oh, really?
I think so. I mean, I vaguely remember it. It's not as played out as that.
Right.
But it was like that sort of type of movie. People in relationships and sex and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
I was like on cable once and I felt like I shouldn't be watching it because there was a sex scene.
Watch the whole thing.
Blade 2, Demolition Man.
Major League,
which is classic.
Yeah.
U.S. Marshals, New Jack City, and Passenger 57. So, like, when I looked at this list is when I was like, he's not underrated.
Because, no, exactly.
Because I was just like, you know, I mean, his best movie maybe ever is maybe Major League. Like... Major League is great.
White Men Can't Jump is pretty good,
White
too.
Men Can't Jump. Right. Like, those are some pretty sweet movies. And, like, New Jack City has some good moments. But, like, most of those movies, you know, Simon Phoenix, he's entertaining.
Yeah, they're all fine. They're all decent movies. None of them I'm like, I don't want to watch that. I'd probably watch any of those movies again.
Yeah, it's a top 10 where I wouldn't be super disappointed to watch any of the movies. But it would not be, like, my goal to go catch up on them.
This is so interesting, though. So you sit there and you talk about Wesley Snipes in his peak and, like, is his peak Snipes, and it seemed like he'd have money to do anything.
Yeah.
It goes to show that even though he was a pretty successful actor, a very successful actor, and you look at the amount of money that his films made, it makes sense that since he never got better and his films never got better, he never actually... It made sense why he was able to go bankrupt.
Yeah.
Like, these movies, I mean, $131 million in 98 isn't a lot of money.
Right.
It's not small, especially for a $40 million budget, but, like, seeing that his top 10 are in that, and you have some that aren't even the 100 millions, it makes sense why Wesley Snipes was able to go bankrupt.
But you also see, I mean, from a creative point of view, like, why it's so important if you have a big brand to diversify, which is why the joke in the 2000s about every young actor having a production company was, like, a thing, because it starts to be very clear, the decision for Wesley Snipes to transition, let's say, into more dramatic roles would be... difficult, but maybe he says to himself, no one's going to take me seriously as a dramatic actor, or that's not what I want to do. But what you do say is, then I'm going to at least try to get behind producing movies that are regarded differently.
Right.
So if I want to show up in a movie that's nominated for an Oscar as a supporting character, I can, because I'm producing it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the difference, is like, he's unfortunately in a position where he's doing Chirac because he knows Spike. You know, he does it last year. And I have that conversation with him, and he talks about how great of an opportunity it is for him to do that movie, and he's good in Chirac.
Yeah.
But you really want to be at a point in your career when you're in your 50s where you're able to get those roles. And unfortunately for guys like Dolph Lundgren and Wesley Snipes, it's like you have to be the 50 some odd year old guy who takes great care of your body and continues doing straight to video action movies, because that's what the world knows you for. And you didn't really develop your brand as a producer to do other things.
Yeah. Or as an actor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that unfortunately for him, as entertaining as Blade is, it is definitely his acting that holds the movie back from being much more than it is.
That is very true.
Yeah. I mean, he's just not particularly good in it. So,
critically, this film got a 7.1 on IMDb, which seems high, honestly. It really does. But, you know what? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe 7.1 seems right, because it is fun to watch. It's a good film. It's good enough. That's a C. That's a very low C.
For their scale, it's like pretty, I think that's pretty understandable. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm like pretty harsh with my top 10 scale, because like, what's a perfect 10? A 10,
absolutely.
Nothing's a 10.
La La Land.
Yeah, 5 movies are in there, right? If you're a 9, you're in a remarkable class of movies that are like the best movies ever made.
I think even being in an 8+ is being in some of the hard, it's like the top 2%.
Right.
You know?
So when you start talking about 7s, if you're over 7,
especially as an action movie,
very above average movie.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I would put Blade, like, if I was gonna, I would put Blade like a 6.1 if I was going off that scale. But as far as the IMDb scale goes, it's 7.1's fine.
Yeah, it makes sense, because the difference between 7.1 and 8.1 is like millions apart. You know, it's not just 10 numbers.
Totally.
Okay, and then do you want? Oh, actually, real quick, I'll do this. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 54 by all critics, a 33% by top, and a 78 by audience, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense for what we were just talking about. What is this that you pulled here?
Oh, this is the same thing about him wanting to do another Blade movie.
Oh, gotcha.
So the question is, Blade, clearly, in both of our opinions, is not one of the 5 or 10 best Marvel Comics movies.
It's so hard now.
Yeah, there's so many good ones. So the question becomes, what are the top 5 Marvel Comics movies?
Ever.
Your list, my list.
Not including, like, Daredevil.
No, Marvel Comics. Not Marvel Studios, Marvel Comics. Anything based on a Marvel character goes.
Even, like, Netflix series? That's what I mean. Movies. Not the movies. Movies specifically. Top 5?
Top 5.
Okay.
What's your number 5?
Oh, man. I think I'm going to have to put it at a tie between Punisher.
Thomas Jane Punisher?
Thomas Jane Punisher.
Not Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
No.
Not Warzone.
No. The good one with John Travolta. I think I'm going to put it a tie at Punisher and The Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield.
Oh, wow. You went with some interesting choices.
Those are my two.
That's
like
okay.
My number 5. I love both those movies a lot.
I liked Amazing Spider-Man. I thought that they did a good job. I thought it really captured sort of like the teenage.
You do? You really did?
I mean, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I don't think I would immediately go there as that's a top fiver.
I think that Rhys Ifans is awesome as the bad guy, as the Croc. And I also think that Andrew Garfield was a good Spider-Man.
Yeah. The unfortunate part about that Spider-Man series is that it, because of the studio war, as far as who owned which properties, it wasn't a Marvel Comics movie or a Marvel Studios movie. Which means they're rebooting it again already.
Yeah, and that was the thing, is also with them being caught in like that war, they casted these actors that were on their way up in their star profile, but also were kind of in between being a teenager and an adult.
Yeah.
And now you can't use Emma Stone or him in the new Spider-Man, because he's got to be like a 16-year-old.
Yeah. It's really unfortunate, and it's one of those things where, like, as much as we like to believe, and we're in this sort of, like, audience-driven world where the fans dictate what gets made, it's not the case. Mm-mm. The studio said, you know what? We own the property to do a Spider-Man movie for this many more years. We need to get a cash grab out of this comic for the next 5 years. We need to do 2 movies, and that's what we're going to do. And it doesn't matter that Marvel Studios is doing their thing, because if we don't do this, we spent all this money to own this property for this long, and our contract's up.
Yeah,
Same thing with Fantastic Four.
There will have been 6 Spider-Man movies in the last 15 years.
I mean, think about Fantastic Four. Once that transition's over, there will be another like Fantastic Four movie,
and I hope it's good.
I hope so.
I want it so bad.
I didn't even see the one that came out.
You know what? I didn't either, and I like all of them.
Yeah, I know. It's a great cast.
It's an amazing cast.
Fantastic cast. Yeah. But it was legitimately panned as one of the worst movies of the year.
Ever.
Like, it was 9% Battlefield Earth or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are my number 5. What's your number 5?
My number 5 is going to be X2, X United. People often don't remember that it was called X United. I just remembered that. So
X2 is very good.
X2 was like before Dark Knight was the gold standard for the best comic book movie. Shows how far we've come. I still say X2 has some great scenes. It's peak Logan. I think it's peak Jackman as Wolverine. I think the closest you get is Days of Future Past Logan. Yeah. But
he's sweet in X2.
Yeah, like all the Logan solo movies are bad.
Logan's good.
Yeah, but I mean, Origins is bad. The Wolverine's not particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
unfortunately. They're just kind of mediocre movies. X2 is like when he's at his best. He kills the guy through the fridge.
Yep.
It's just, it was like that perfect...
It was just a sweet movie. Like, really sweet.
It's got Brian Cox.
It's got Brian Cox.
It's just, and it's that Stryker. Sweet combination of like...
I'll never get away.
It's that sweet combination of like... You get to see a bunch of X-Men characters before the days like now where like they can put every character into a movie and like...
It was like watching Civil War 10 years before Civil War came out. Right. Or 15 years before.
You got a bunch of characters. You got a bunch of little characters kind of showing new up ones. Here and there.
You got Ben Foster's Archangel. Was that in that one or was
That's
that three?
That's the third one.
Ah, damn it.
Yeah, this I think X2 is still very good. It holds together really well.
Good.
I think it's the one that ends with the big Phoenix explosion, right? She dies at the end?
Yeah.
They leave Jean behind.
Yeah, she's right? Like that. Yeah, they're trying to take off, and she ends up staying on the ground and stopping the water and all that. The
movie's really good.
It's really good.
I
and
have to
like
watch it again.
The fight between him and the chick with the fingers
totally.
Is sweet. He gets gnarled up in there. Like Wolverine gets torn apart.
That's one of those things too, though, where like that chick's supposed to be Lady Deathstrike, and they don't do a very good job with
it
because from the comics she looks nothing. It's just it was stupid. So
people like me who didn't read the comics are like, she's sweet. Look at her sharp fingers. Number four, I'm going to go with Civil War.
Okay.
Captain America Civil War. I think, for me, our good friend Matt Haggerty, who is gone again, he moved to Atlanta for a year to shoot Infinity Wars.
It's the next two Avengers movies.
And he told me everything. No, he didn't tell me anything.
he, like, won't even tell his roommate things?
No, he said the only person that he would tell anything to if he were going to tell anyone would be his brother who lives in Alaska.
Yeah.
He said that's the only person he would if he were to.
Watch him like, start dating a smoking hot chick, tell her everything, get fired.
what I loved about Civil War was not only was it a badass movie, is that it brought in new characters like Black Panther and new Spider-Man and all that, and it was done so well.
Yeah.
They didn't steal from each other, and I was so worried about it getting all, just being a clusterfuck, essentially, on screen, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so that just gives me a lot of hope for Infinity War. So that is my number four.
Yeah, it's it was definitely super sweet. I didn't put Civil War on my list. I really like Civil War. My thing with Civil War is kind of the same reason that the first Avengers, surprise, surprise, doesn't make my list.
Yeah, it doesn't make mine either.
They're
not even close.
They're really fucking sweet, but there's this thing I have with like so many characters, like superhero characters. We're just comfortable with it now, so we sort of forget that like if you're just watching this for the first time, it's a little bit like... There's a little too much going on.
Yeah.
And that's the reason Civil War didn't make it for me, but it's close.
In improv, we always talk about in scenes, you want to go deep, not wide.
Yeah.
And it feels like with Avengers movies, you're just covering way too much.
Yeah, exactly. That's Age of Ultron. I felt the same way.
Yeah.
But I mean, but Civil War would make my top 10 because the fight scenes are...
Just the fight scene alone between Cap, the Winter Soldier, and Iron Man is awesome.
That shot they showed from the trailer was
so
sick.
So good.
Right, where they're trading off a shield, beating him down.
Yeah.
Super fucking cool.
Yeah.
And also when they're getting out of the building was really cool, the beginning.
Yeah.
There was just some awesome, awesome stuff in that movie. So, anyway, my number four is going to be Deadpool. Deadpool.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I laughed out loud. It was, I mean... Talk about a career turnaround. Ryan Reynolds was on the outs. Didn't he just win Sexiest Man Alive this last year?
Yeah, the thing that's so crazy about Ryan Reynolds is that you love to hate him when he was oversaturated.
Yeah.
Then he completely fell off the market, became like, you know, he was in Buried.
Yeah.
And then what happened? I think the best thing that ever happened to Ryan Reynolds, and I think he'll agree, is marrying Blake Lively.
Seems like it, yeah.
It seems like something about when they got married, they both kind of got their heads on right. And now look at him. He's a badass.
Ryan Reynolds is awesome.
He really is. And, like, you watch him in interviews and the shit that he says, the dude is awesome. He's, like, a really cool dude.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always been a big fan of Just Friends. And
Friends.
The unfortunate thing for Ryan Reynolds was that until Deadpool, the best thing he had ever done was Just Friends.
By far.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah, that movie is a classic.
Number three, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, okay. Guardians.
Shocked. Great. Didn't think it was going to be that good. Loved it.
Yeah, it's Star Wars and the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Guardians is my number two. So
okay.
I can just say that
So
outright.
What's your number three?
My number three is Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Really?
I went Winter Soldier over Civil War. Yeah.
What's your number one?
Iron Man.
Iron Man. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I think Iron Man is my number one. It's really tough, but First Class is really close number two.
Oh, you put it way high.
I love First Class.
Let's be honest.
I love it.
There's
no.
two good scenes in First Class.
No,
the rest of
the
movie's overrated.
That's the thing is that that's what everyone says, and those scenes are awesome. We know which ones they are.
Yeah,
they're
Magneto
both
in the
with
bar.
Fassbender. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that movie is awesome. I love that movie. The scenes on the beach at the end when he gets paralyzed and like the way he kills Kevin Bacon.
With the quarter.
With the quarter, yeah. And the pulling of the teeth and just, I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's almost my number one, but I have to give it to Iron Man because Iron Man started it all. Even though X-Men started it all.
Well, yeah, it's you look at each era. Like, it's funny. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Blade because we're on the subject of comic book movies. You have to go way back. You look at the very, 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 very first era of superhero movies.
Superman.
And it's Superman.
Yeah.
But Superman didn't really spawn a good generation of them.
It was just like, now we can make Superman movies.
Yeah. So
Seven of them.
That was the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. Then the next big era and the big explosion was Batman in 89.
Yep.
So you had basically the entire 90s, for the most part, were Batman movies and a couple failed attempts. You had, like, all these produced movies that never saw the light of day. There was a Captain America movie that got made that never came out. There was a Nick Fury movie starring David Hasselhoff that never came out.
Yes.
There was a Fantastic Four movie. There's just these, they just weren't doing it right. So the 90s was sort of like this Batman wasteland.
Yeah, because I remember as a kid in the 90s, during this Batman wasteland is when you were starting to be like, but I want more.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
The Batman cartoon was super popular.
Really bad. Superman movie came out in 2000.
Oh, the Superman Returns.
Yeah.
In 06, probably.
Was it that late?
07, wow. Something like that.
That was so bad.
Yeah, with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brandon Routh. So, but I think Iron Man really represents the kickoff of the next, because it's the same year as Dark Knight. I mean, Dark Knight and Iron Man are the same fucking year.
Yeah.
DC and Marvel both had a massive hit. And Iron Man in 2008 set records for how much money it made. Mm-hmm. And now we've really seen, you know, it's going to be 10 years since that movie came out pretty soon. And the last decade has just been crazy for comic book movies.
It's so crazy. I mean, technically we could cover Iron Man on the show.
Let's be honest. We can do whatever
we can do whatever we want. But, like, again, if we did Dark Knight, then we can do Iron Man because he has no superpowers.
And as I've always said, Iron Man and Batman are
this, yeah, for their respective companies. But now we're just really tangenting, but I just got to say it real quick. Robert Downey Jr. is by far, that's his career-defining role, but 10 years ago, he was so famous for other shit, other than hookers.
It's really hard to say. I mean, at this point, right now, that's like easy to say.
Yeah.
It's like that or Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
But
he's had such a long career.
He got an Oscar nomination for playing Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that guy was in all kinds of shit in the 80s.
That's what I'm saying, is it's like, how can you give him a career-defining role for a person that was, if he were to have died and never made Iron Man, he would have still been regarded as a great actor.
Totally.
Yeah. It's just super interesting to think about that.
Absolutely. So my list then, counting 5 to 1, is X-Men 2, Deadpool, Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Iron Man 1.
And mine are The Amazing Spider-Man and The Punisher, Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man 1. I'm not doing them in order.
Oh, sure.
And X-Men First Class.
Sweet.
Yep.
All right, moving on, guys. If you have a top five you want to share with us, leave them in the comments, please. Or, of course, tweet at us. Oh, we didn't even do any introductions.
We haven't done a show in a whole year.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So if you want to tweet your thoughts, tweet at AMA Podcast. You can tweet me personally at Ben Bateman Media.
And you can tweet me personally at Andrew Guy. And also, let's please do hit up Twitter with any of your top fives or your thesis or anything. My phone died halfway through the show, so at AMA Podcast with any of your thoughts, including what we're moving into next. It's been a long time, my friend.
Yeah. Doing favorite line.
Yeah.
Yeah. You thought we were going into recast.
I thought we were going into recast. Damn it.
This one's pretty easy for me. I mean, Blade's got some... He's got some really good moments. Mm-hmm. I think it's... I'll bet you we have... One is going to have one, one's going to have the other, unless we have the same one.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
At the end, when he kicks the googly-moogly stuff into Stephen Dorff's head, and he looks at him, he's like... Some motherfuckers is always trying to ice skate up here. I don't think he says is, actually. I just added that.
Yeah.
That was a bad Ebonics mistake. I'm sorry.
What is wrong
guys.
With you?
Some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill.
Yeah, that was just great. And it was one of those just like breaking character. Yeah, it was perfect. I'm actually going to do a different one so that you can do the other Wesley one.
Okay.
It's a Stephen Dorff line, and it's early on. He goes, for fuck's sake. These people are our food, not our allies.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a sweet line. It's like, I would be him.
Yeah, right.
I would probably be that guy. I'd be like, we eat them.
Right.
Why are we listening to them?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then you'd get killed by Blade.
And then I'd get killed by Blade.
Yeah.
And I'd be the bad guy.
Yeah, and he'd look at you before he killed you. He'd be like, you could have been Stephen Dorff.
You skating uphill, motherfucker. All right, what's the other great Blade
I'm the
one?
I'm a producer. I was willing to cast an Asian American as Stephen Dorff.
He was.
You're skating uphill, motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
The other one is just like when Blade first talks.
Yep.
When he's like saving the doctor from the hospital. No, it's not when he first talks, actually.
Yeah, he said a few lines.
Yeah, but it's the first time he, like, breaks character and says some shit, and he's like, you motherfuckers out your mind?
You out your damn mind? Yeah, because when they shoot him, right?
Yeah, he says, are you out your goddamn mind? And they're shooting at him because he's trying to save her. I don't know, it's just like, he breaks character a few times in the movie to do shit like that, and every time he does it, it's just brilliant.
Well, it is, because he's so stoic. That when he breaks, he's like, and he smiles, or he says that, you're like, where the fuck did that come from? You're like, oh, yeah. That's kind of awesome, though.
It's Wesley Snipes. It's
awesome,
he's punching it up. You know, he's a producer. So,
I improv that.
All right, we're going to move into something we haven't done in quite a long time, guys, and this is going to be recast. We take the cast of this film from 1998, we flash it forward 16 years. If we were to remake the movie today with new actors in the lead roles, who would we cast to star in these roles? A little loose today. I went with some people I've never used before.
I went with a bunch of people I'd never used before either, but I think it's a great cast.
So how about Stephen Dorff? What do you got?
So I went with Sam Claflin.
Who's that?
He plays Fennec in the Hunger Games movies.
Fennec.
He's like kind of, you think he's a bad guy. He's kind of like douchey, all-American, blonde.
Trident, dude.
What?
Trident, dude.
Yeah, he's one of the...
Yeah. Okay, he's one of the dudes, one of the kids.
Yeah, he's been training his whole life or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't know what he's
and you find about. Out he's actually a good guy. Yeah, I just watched him in another movie where he's like he plays a quadriplegic.
Yeah,
with Emilia Clarke. He's actually a pretty good actor. I actually really like that guy, and I think he's got the perfect look, like that vampire look.
Sure,
you know.
Sure. So I went with, if they were going to remake the movie today, they would need some like brand name power, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for Robert Pattinson to make his return to the vampire realm.
God damn it.
And play Stephen Dorff. Because here's the thing about Robert Pattinson. He's not great in the Twilight movies. Like,
no.
He's just not great. But I also don't think those movies are great or the scripts are
great.
No,
they're not.
He was in a movie with Guy Pearce called The Rover.
Are you going to tell me he's a good actor?
He was great in that.
That's what I hear from so many people, is that Robert Pattinson's a fantastic actor.
He was good enough in Remember Me.
Is that the plane one or the 9/11
yeah.
one? Yeah.
He's good enough in that movie. And he was fine in the Harry Potter movie. He's like, I don't know that he would nail this to the wall, because Stephen Dorff is a very particular brand of, like, fuck.
Yeah.
But, like...
It's because he's kind of sleazy.
If you put Pattinson not as like the top name, but he's like the third or fourth bill, then I think you could legitimately make him work as the villain.
Well, I think the one thing,
like a bad guy vampire.
You and I have similar with these casts, is both these guys have that about them. And
yeah.
my guys had the opportunity to do it. I think they both could do it pretty well.
I don't think Pattinson would take it, because I think he wouldn't want anywhere near a vampire.
Which
movie.
Is hilarious, because at this point he should take basically anything.
He may prove us wrong.
I think he will.
Efron did it. Like,
yeah. Shia is doing it.
Yeah. Pattinson really honestly may resurface.
I hope not.
Really?
I really do.
You don't like that guy.
The Efrons and the Channing Tatums of the world.
Yeah.
I don't think I did hate Zac Efron at one point.
Yeah.
I really did with High School Musical, but I didn't actually dislike him. He was just way too oversaturated, just like Pattinson was. So maybe give him some time. Maybe I'll come around.
And look at Leo. He turned out to be the greatest actor of our generation, not named Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
Philip.
PSH. All right. And Boucher Wright, who are you going to go as the girl?
Naomi Harris. Love her. I just saw her in Collateral Beauty, which is actually way better than I thought it was going to be. And she's awesome as M, and she's beautiful. I like her. That's who I want.
I went with Naomi Rapace. She's the chick from Prometheus.
Yep.
And the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series.
Yeah.
She's just kind of got this interesting look, and she's going to pair up well off my Blade recast. Obviously, it's a racial shift, which there's no real reason she has to be black, so
no.
She feels like she would be good for the role. She seems like interesting,
and I would believe
her as a biologist.
There's only one moment why she needs to be black. That's when he first saves her.
Oh, because
he looks, and it reminds him
of his mom.
Of his mom in the hospital.
Well,
I think
I would hope that if they redid this movie, they would ditch the whole Blade's mom thing.
That sucked. That whole storyline was really dumb and not okay,
and bad, and weird,
and gross.
Creepy,
yeah,
and gross.
She was like sexual towards him, and yeah,
it was weird. It needed to not be there.
No, it just needed to be like, you've been looking for the vampire that bit you your mom your whole life. It was me. Like, that's all you needed to do.
Yeah.
That's it. You don't need to bring her in.
Even that feels like, I don't need that.
No, you don't.
That feels way too convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Hollywood for you.
Yeah.
For Kris Kristofferson, I went with Mr. Scott Glenn. But I wanted to do... Are you going to use him or no?
Scott Glenn?
No,
oh, no.
My
Sam
other
Elliott?
One?
No, yeah. No, I got to go.
I wanted to do an honorable mention for Sam Elliott from Roadhouse, because the guy is timeless. He is a vampire.
Yeah. Not Kris Kristofferson. That's who we're recasting. I went Mads Mikkelsen. So
I am pain.
death.
He's fucking sweet.
He's
that
awesome.
That guy's great. Okay, talk about a guy who's really built his career out of being the like evil looking guy that no one knew who he was to like I was in Rogue One.
I was in Rogue One and Doctor Strange in the same year. The two biggest movies of the year.
That guy's sweet.
Casino Royale was the first time that I'd really like noticed Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
And what he's done for his career is amazing. And then the fact that he opens a full bottle of vodka in an interview.
That blew
if you guys
my
haven't
mind.
Seen that, like you sent me that clip and I saw it blown up all over social media the next couple days. He's a badass.
He opened a full bottle of vodka in a Junket interview.
And he looks like he drinks a full bottle of vodka every day.
He does, but he holds it together
but
remarkably
really
well.
He really does it great.
Yeah. And it's vodka. That's the thing about him, because he looks like a foreign villain. Oh, I should say he looks like a foreign villain in an action movie.
He does.
Like, he has that look. There. He just opens the full bottle of vodka. It's just amazing. Mads, here
it is. Oh, there it is. There's my full bottle. Let me just
crack
that open real quick.
Open this bottle of Stoli.
Just pour it in this glass.
I'm just going to get wasted because I don't want to be here doing press.
And I can do whatever I want.
So what I want him for this is I want him to have like long, raggedy hair and just like grizzled and like a beard.
Like a mix between him and Doctor Strange as the bad guy, but just like with Chris Christopherson.
Exactly. Yeah. Who's your Blade?
Chadwick Boseman. The new Black Panther.
Oh, yeah, the guy from Civil War.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's awesome.
He's great.
I loved him. I think he can fight like a badass. I just really like that guy. I think he's got what we always talk about. I think he's got movie star charisma.
Sweet. Yeah. I went with an interesting one. I went with Mahershala Ali. So he is the...
What'd you call me?
He's in Moonlight, which is one of the big Oscar contenders. He's in House of Cards. He's in, Luke Cage. He's great. He's really, really good in Moonlight. He's maybe a little old for the role, but I have a feeling if they were like, we're going to make a Blade movie, we just, you know, train for 6 months, get in like superhero shape, get super jacked. Mm-hmm. He could do it. And I like him. I like him. I believe him. He seems like, I like the idea of him playing against Naomi Rapace and all that. Like, he just seems like he'd be good for it. I don't know. Maybe that's just me reaching on this one. But
no, I like
sweet.
That. I actually think that's a good cast. And what I also like is that you and I have different people for our new young black actor instead of just Michael B. Jordan like a year ago when we did this.
Yeah, it's I know.
It's crazy how we've done 80-plus episodes. And if you go back and you watch the beginning, anytime we had to recast a younger black actor or an older black actor, there's like 8 to pull from.
Right.
And just in a year and a half, that number has grown exponentially, which I think is awesome.
And I've talked about the Michael B. Jordan interview on the Bill Simmons podcast before, where he's having the conversation with Simmons.
Yeah.
Simmons is like, who's on your corner? Like, who are you up against for roles? And he's like, honestly, Denzel.
He's
like, it'll just change the age. There's like a few guys. That's it. Yeah.
And now it's just cool. It's like you look at all these fantastic actors coming up, and yeah, I'm excited about it. So let's move on to categories.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So there's 3 action movie categories, guys. There's Totally Ridiculous, mm-hmm. which are movies like Con Air and Face Off, and they kind of make you laugh unintentionally, but they're entertaining. There's Totally Legitimate, movies like The Fugitive or Lone Survivor or even, like, we'll say Terminator 2, because they hold together really, really well. You're never really taken out of the movie.
My sister loves Lone Survivor, by the way. I had no idea she'd even watch it. Julia,
so
the oldest.
Good.
Yeah.
So good. And then the middle category, which is Ridiculously Legitimate. These are movies like Predator, The Rock, Speed. They kind of make you laugh unintentionally. Intentionally here and there, but ultimately they're rooted in like a few really strong elements, like maybe a great lead character. And we kind of divide movies into the 3 categories. Blade's a really interesting one. Do you have yours?
It is really interesting because the movie's self-aware so much to the point it almost touches. It's so weird. It's like you see elements of The Matrix and elements of Deadpool and elements of all these films in this film.
The studio originally wanted to make this an action comedy, like a self-referential parody almost. And Goyer had to talk him out of it. It almost was that movie.
It was so close.
Snakes on a Plane meets Blade, you know?
I think I still, at the end of the day, I still have to go... I don't know. What are your thoughts? I want to hear your thoughts before we both just unveil.
I think probably going... If I was to, like... I think this movie is Totally Ridiculous.
Right? It feels like it should be.
Yeah, it doesn't have enough things going for it where I'm like, that's an all-time this, that, or the other, that I'm like, this gets to be the middle category. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a good enough lead. He's like a very entertaining lead, but not so much so that I feel like he's necessarily a better lead than Malkovich as the villain in, like, Con Air, or like a better lead than, like, you know, cages and like Face Off. Like, it's, you know, it's like he's
is it good. Specifically him that pulls you out of that middle category?
No, I was trying to think, he's the most memorable part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because everything else is sort of like, Steven Dorff's fine. It's like really silly in a lot of cases. There's some really cool moments, but overall, like, you laugh throughout a lot of this movie. It's silly. I mean, the schoolgirls, like, dancing in the club. We didn't even reference that. I mean, there's so many things about this movie. The fat thing that is farting. Like, there's just, like, a lot of it is just absurd. Yeah. So, for me, watching it, I think I have to put it in the totally ridiculous category.
I think I do, too, but just because it feels right. I feel like totally ridiculous is the right thing. However, I know that watching this film growing up, it was 100% ridiculously legitimate.
Yeah.
Like, there was things in there that were, like, terrifying. And, like,
the dude getting a blowjob in the club when they first walked
in. Yeah, there's
just... didn't even reference
awesome
that moment.
We did it.
We're like, wow, this is definitely rated R.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. For that and like, the other weird random things, the schoolgirls and just, like, the mom. I'm going to go totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
The mom. I think the mom is the only argument I have to make.
Yeah. That took me out.
It was super weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at that point, we always mention how, like, it's so hard to finish up an action movie. It's almost hard to finish up a comedy. But it's so hard to finish up an action movie and make it, like, you know, power through to the end.
Yeah.
And this movie does a good job of it. But that storyline of the mom, it takes away from the inflation of the climax, I think.
Super weird.
It's super weird.
Yeah. So we're in agreement. So there's only one thing left to do on the show today, and that's called
The Pitch.
So I believe what we're going to do is we have two ideas for next week.
We do.
And they're both in reference to things that are going on, and we're going to put them up in a poll, as long as you're okay with this.
I'm totally okay with it, yeah.
So number one, we have talked for the longest time about doing Armageddon on the show.
We have.
Our buddy Roka, who came on the last time to do... What was Roka on here for? Demolition Man or Fifth Element?
I think he was
on for the Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roka, who does a couple different podcasts, has always said to us that he needs to come back to do Armageddon. So obviously, if we vote for Armageddon next week, he can't come that week. We'll push it a week.
Yeah.
But we need Roka to come in and do Armageddon. That's option number one.
I'm so inclined to do Armageddon because I do not remember caring strongly about that film, other than this song.
Yeah. I'm going to do a performance of this song on the show.
You love this movie.
Armageddon?
You love Armageddon.
Well, it's part of the classic Bay era.
You think it's one of the greatest American action movies made?
No, that's what Roka says.
That's what Roka says. American action.
I've always thought that Armageddon was like sweet, totally like a product of its time.
Right.
It's like Affleck in his like young, just post Goodwill Hunting,
and,
before
yeah.
Yeah, it's like everything about the first run of Affleck is in this movie. It's got Willis. It's got the fucking soundtrack.
I know. Okay.
All the supporting characters you love.
I do.
Buscemi. It's got fucking Michael Clarke Duncan.
I know. So that's my point. Is like
Billy Bob.
You talk about this movie
Wilson?
In high regards. Roka is the one I was confusing it with.
Yeah.
Who thinks this is one of the greatest movies ever made?
Yeah.
I want to be on board.
Well, I haven't seen it in a long time. So hopefully it's as good as I remember. That's option one.
Okay.
Option two, and I believe we'll do both of these probably in the next 3 weeks, but option two is going to be Patriots Day.
Why not?
Which is the third Dockbuster by
Peter Berg
and Mark Wahlberg working together.
We love Lone Survivor. We love Deepwater Horizon.
It has like an 80% on Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be really good.
This is one of those moments where you're like, God damn it, are you taking advantage of something or not? And are you oversaturating yourself because you've done two Dockbusters in the same year?
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's definitely a lot.
I've heard Patriots Day is great. They probably did them back to back and knew, like, we'll just release these, whatever.
Yeah.
I hope it's really good.
Me too.
You know, it would be, we should try to bring somebody on. We have a lot of friends at this network who are from Boston. And I think that'd be a fun...
That is interesting.
Maybe Roxy wants to come on for this.
Maybe. It's been a long time since we had Rox on.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So I think that'd be a cool thing. So we're going to put up Patriots Day and Armageddon on a poll, guys. Mm-hmm. Go follow us at AMA Podcast, and we will let you guys decide which one you want to see us do next week. Thank you so much for tuning in for the first show of 2017. This was a lot of fun. We went a little long. I think we got a little...
We did. We were excited to be back.
Yeah, so...
You guys can always find me online on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Andrew Guy.
You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram, and that's the one. And Stephen Lemieux, thank you for engineering and being back in the booth, man. It's good to have you back.
For sure.
We'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Bye, guys.
From
from producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.